rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Bruce E. Castle presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Davis. To my left is Judge Greenberg. We're here today in the matter of David Gagne, docket number 140334. Counsel for the parties, please introduce yourselves.
Amy Odom of National Veterans Legal Services Program. For the appellant, with me at counsel table, I have David Sonnenschein, also of National Veterans Legal Services Program.
All right, thank you.
Tamika Springs. Prosecutor and Department of Veterans Affairs. To my right,
co-counsel,
Christopher Wallace.
Thank you. Both parties ready to proceed?
Yes.
All right. Each party will have 30 minutes to present argument. Counsel Appellant, how much would you like to reserve some time?
Yes, we are going to reserve 25 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay. I understand the clerk has informed us that the government has agreed to a remand, but you're still in dispute as to the terms of the remand?
Yes, we believe that there is still an issue to be resolved.
So why shouldn't we just recess and let you guys do that? I mean, to JMR, right?
Well, Your Honor, the issues in this case involve the VA, the scope of the VA's duty to assist in helping a veteran to obtain federal records necessary to substantiate a PTSD stressor from the JSRC and from other resources. And the VA Adjudication Procedures Manual states that no assistance will be provided unless the veteran is able to narrow the window.
Where does it say that?
Well, the particular provision at issue here is Part 4, Subpart 2, Chapter 1, Section D, 14F of the, I'm going to call it the old version of the M21.
Well, which version is relevant?
Well,
the old, the new, the future?
All three, Your Honor.
What do you want us to consider besides all three in making our informed decision?
Well, before we go there, can I get you to read to me what it is you're talking about? What is it, where does it say they can't do something?
It says, at a minimum, the veteran must, and must is italicized, provide the following: the approximate date within a 2-month period of the incident. So this is the burden upon the veteran to provide this information, and before the VA will provide assistance, and the secretary.
So where does it say that the secretary can't do more if the veteran can't provide that?
Well, that's our position, is that the secretary must do more under the.
So where in the M21 does it say he can't do more?
Well, in this case, the VA didn't do more.
Okay, but you started out with a proposition. I'm just trying to figure out. It's your belief that VA is interpreting it that way? Because I'm not reading where it says what you said at the beginning.
Yes, the secretary argued forcefully in his brief that this policy is valid. Just yesterday.
All right, which policy is valid?
That if the veteran is unable to provide a 60-day window, no assistance will be provided.
Okay, so your view is that the secretary's position is that this provision of the M21-1, which simply says that at a minimum the veteran must provide this information, that if they don't provide it, the VA's actual implementation policy is they will not seek it.
Yes, Your Honor, and anecdotally it happens all the time. However, just yesterday the general counsel contacted us and informed us that the secretary will now be making some duty to assist violation concessions in this oral argument. And these concessions that the secretary has informed us he will make will shift the focus of the oral argument from whether the secretary erred at all to what's the appropriate remedy.
All right, so now to Judge Greenberg's question. What is it you want this court to do?
Your Honor, I can't speak for the secretary.
No, what do you want?
What is the veteran
want?
It is
not our understanding that the secretary is willing to change his M21 provision or change his policy. It is our understanding that the Secretary is going to take a specific litigation position in this case and concede error in this case.
So your position is you're not going to agree to a joint motion for remand. You're sitting here before the court. You want to have oral argument, and you would like this court to come out with a position that says a duty to assist requires them to do more than stop when a veteran can't give you 2 months.
Well, at the outset, I want to make clear that when we received this phone call yesterday, the conversation was predicated that this is not a JMR offer. So far, we have not gotten a JMR offer that...
Okay. Well, I don't think there's any concern here at this point that you're not acting as a lawyer of the court and working to resolve the case, all right? But I am trying to figure out, I think we're all trying to figure out, what it is you want.
One, we want this M21 provision invalidated.
To the extent it's being applied as you say it's being applied.
Exactly. Two, we want a precedential decision that makes it official that the Secretary cannot, in all cases, have a flat rule that it's going to that he's going to deny assistance if the 60-day window isn't provided.
Okay, so how many times do you want the Secretary to go to JS, whatever it is? How many times do you want them to presumably, what, break down the time period and
yes.
send over two-month periods?
That is what we said in our brief, because we were trying to work around this particular requirement. However, I think we need to hear from the Secretary about...
What do you want? Before you hear from the Secretary, what do you want?
I see my time has expired.
No, it's not. Add on.
We don't care whether
5 minutes.
Six requests to the JSRC or one request.
Well, I mean, we're looking at a rule. They have a rule, as you say it, that it's two. They said two. You're telling us two months is too narrow, or not breaking it down and doing more is not enough. Well, what is enough?
What's enough in this case is whatever they needed to do to make the request for corroboration.
So if they asked for, broke it down into the first 2 months of an overseas and got a no, and the second 2 months and got a no, you would say they'd have to do six or seven of these requests, breaking it down, to fulfill the duty to assist.
It's possible they could do one. I mean, we'll have to hear.
Well, only if one came back and said it was positive with regard to the information. But if one came back and negative, your view is the Secretary would have to go out with as many requests limited to the 2 months, because that's the JSRC's whatever. That's their requirement. So VA could go and say, 2 months, give me the information. And they could do that for the entire period that we're talking about. And your view is they would have to do that?
Yes, or one request for the full year. And
well, the one request for the full year doesn't seem to be VA's issue. It's a JSRCC's issue. I know I'm saying that wrong. Put it in the record right.
Well, I think I want to make two points to that.
Right.
First of all, I think it's necessary to hear what the Secretary has to say about the facts of this particular case to understand what is possible. And second of all, and this is going off record, so please stop me if...
No, you're not off record. You are on record.
Well, outside of the record, so
okay.
Please stop me if I go too far. But at this court's judicial conference in March 2010, the director of the Joint Services Research and Record Center said that if the regional office asks us to search more than 60 days, we will comply with that request. And a representative from Compensation and Pension Service said it's a JSRC and VA requirement that they collaborated on the JSRC stressor guide. So to the extent that...
Okay, so let me just go back. You're proffering to us that the head of the JSRRC said that if a request went in for more than 2 months, they would honor that.
Right. The goal is to narrow it down to 60 days to make it easier on the JSRRC. But the fact of the matter is human nature is such that you can't always narrow something down to 40 from 40 years ago to 60 days. I don't remember events to 60 days that happened in college, and that wasn't 40
years. Well, let me focus on that for a second, because this is a person who supposedly had somebody that they fell in love with. And he can talk about 6 months of being depressed thereafter, after their death. He can talk about 3 weeks after meeting him, they saw her again. And he can talk about a month after that, she died. So what part of that could that person not bracket?
Well, Your Honor, we actually didn't make an issue of that particular stressor because I'm not sure that that's something that could be corroborated by military records. The particular stressor that we're making an issue of here is a sergeant of a particular unit being crushed to death between two vehicles. Now, certainly, maybe some people can narrow it down to 60 days, but Mr. Gagne specifically...
Could he narrow it down to 6 months? Could he have narrowed it down to any? Could he have responded to the specific request that VA asked him?
Well, sure, he could have, but he already told them before they even sent that second letter that he couldn't give them specific dates.
Yes.
And that this is the best.
But isn't there a difference between a specific date and a two-month window?
There is. But it would have been great if he would have been able to narrow it down more for the VA. But according to the VA's policy, 6 months would not have been enough because the VA reads the duty to assist as not applying and they're excused from the duty to assist. In this case,
what about the failure of the veteran to respond at all? I mean, he got that. He didn't respond. He got an RO that said he didn't provide his specific information. He got a DRO that told him, or a supplemental statement of the case. I mean, he's getting information saying you didn't provide us anything specific. At what point could he have not responded and said, look, the best I can do is I arrived and a month later I met this girl, that's the girl one, or the best I can do is I've been in country for 3 months or 4 months or a few months at the time when this death occurred.
And again, sure, that would have been ideal, but the fact that it didn't happen in this case doesn't excuse the duty to assist under the statute.
So what would be the duty to assist of the VA? Is it to then ask again to give a second request?
It's to provide the request to the JSRRC.
Okay. So if he had a three-year term or a four-year term, you would go out and you would do as many as there are because the veteran can't sit here and say, I remember the driver's name and back. I don't remember my sergeant's name. I had an accident in which somebody died, and it's been bothering me for 40 years. I'm now reporting it, and I can't bracket it within a 13-month period anywhere?
My time has expired.
No, it's not. Add
more.
3 more minutes.
Better add 10 more minutes.
I'm just trying to really go around this duty to assist, because it can be unlimited.
No, it's not unlimited.
Well, I'm hearing from you it's unlimited.
No.
Limited to the fact that he was 13 months overseas.
Well, may I?
Yes, please.
What's wrong with 2 months, 2 months beyond that, 2 months beyond that, until you get to the 13 months he was in Vietnam, or Thailand in this case? Why don't you just say, it, under the duty to assist, VA must ask the DOD and this little agency apparently in the DOD that has these records, well, if you insist on 2 months, by the way, where does the 2 months come from? A regulation or a manual?
No, it comes from my, our understanding is it comes from the Joint Services Research Records Center Stressor Verification Guide, which was the collaboration between the JSRRC and VA.
All right. So two government agencies get together and decide what's convenient for them. Is that basically what happened here?
It seems to be
right.
The case.
So apart from all of those issues for the moment, what's wrong with the man writes a letter, says to the VA, this veteran says, this is what I observed, this is the result, PTSD, whether it's 40 years later or whether he's been suffering from it on a dormant or latent basis all the 40 years. What's wrong with the letter saying, I was in Thailand, you've got a DD-214 that shows the period of time? Why doesn't the burden shift immediately to the VA to keep asking this DOD agency, well, add 2 months and another 2 months until you get 13 months, which is the time he was overseas. And then you can get to Judge Castle's question of does it go for 40 years or how much. But at least start with, shouldn't your position be, they have an obligation to at least ask the Department of Defense for all the records during this 13-month period?
Yes, and that is our position. Now,
what I'm trying to ask, though, is, where does that end? What if he was overseas for 24 months? What if he was overseas for 36? I know that's a what if, but I am interested in your view. Where does it end? What if it was just in service and I served for 20 years?
Well, the statute says reasonable.
Right. So what's reasonable?
13 months.
And that's your cap. If he had been over there 14, you'd stop.
It's a case-by-case determination, right? So let's say this is a brown water case, okay? And the veteran says, while I was aboard the USS Howitt, I was in the Red River, and we know from his records that he was in there, he was on the aboard the USS Howitt for 2 years. But would it be unreasonable to search 2 years of deck logs? No, right? Because you know you don't have to look at, you look at the top of the deck log and it says Subic Bay, you know you don't have to look at those. So in the end, the 2 years of death logs isn't unreasonable. Now flip that. Maybe it is unreasonable to go through 2 years of morning reports of every single day. But that's a case-by-case determination.
I thought the problem was how the JSRRC filed their information. So it's not just here's this deck log and they're all together. It's they're spread out. But maybe I'm wrong on that.
I think it's chronological, isn't it? Isn't that the problem?
Or I haven't.
That's your point about finding out from the Secretary.
Yeah, respectfully, I've never been to the JSRRC, so I don't know what their documents look like.
Where is it? Is it a building with people in it? Is it a computer?
I bet the Secretary knows the answer to these questions.
The Secretary of the Veterans Affairs?
Yes. All I know is that from its website, which again is not in the record, but in looking at its website, it seems to be part of the Army's Record Management Agency. And anecdotally, my colleague here, David Sonnenschein, does some combat-related special compensation work and has been denied by the JSRRC after making private requests for records. So it seems that only the VA is this particular part of the Army's client. So the VA should have specialized knowledge.
All right, if I may, would you be content with this a determination in a particular case? Why couldn't you just decide that 13 months is reasonable because that's the total amount of time he spent in the combat zone where he said this stressor took place and require the department, this secretary, to continue to work it out with the DOD agency for at least 13 months? Why do we have to go through some big abstraction? Why don't we just resolve the problem for Mr. Gagne? You must go back 13 months in two-month increments or whatever. Except for these purposes, the DOD's rational basis for insisting on a two-month window. We have cases, I uncovered cases where the agency did that when they asked to repeatedly to do it by the VA. DOD did, in fact, stack, if you will, the two-month period and another two-month period and another two-month period, back even a year. So what's wrong with just saying, you're content if they go back and find out, do the records exist, to buttress the veteran story for 13 months and leave it at that?
Because we still have this M21 1MR provision, and the M21 is the Bible to the line adjudicators at the RO. And the M21 has this mandatory language. The veteran must provide this information. The line adjudicator is not going to ignore that language and just, you know, make up some different policy. Perhaps it happens in the extraordinary case, but in my experience, this is what I generally see. If you don't have the 60 days, you get the
So you think your attack on the M21 per se is necessary for this court to make a determination in this case that the Secretary violated his duty to assist by not asking for 6 or 7 2-month periods?
Yes, ideally we would like you to invalidate the M21.
Is that your client speaking or are you speaking on behalf of your practice?
I'm speaking on behalf of my client. And if the court determines that invalidating this provision isn't necessary or appropriate, we at least need a precedential decision that says reasonable effort.
Why does your client need that?
Your Honor, in conversations with our client, he's indicated that he is interested in helping other veterans through his case. And again, you know, we haven't gotten any offers, any, you know, settlement negotiation that has gone on previously hasn't been up to what we believe and the client believes is necessary. But even if the court decides not to invalidate this M21 provision, this is a perfect opportunity for the court to issue a precedential decision in an area of law where there isn't any precedential decision about the 60-day time requirement. That's a matter of continuing public policy and clarifies the scope of the duty to assist in this particular circumstance. And that decision would say, in this case, under these circumstances, this is a reasonable request.
But how is that really helpful? Going back to the question, Judge Greenberg's noted that we could resolve this by saying, in this case, 12 months is reasonable. Well, how does that provide any guidance to anybody down the road as to why it would be important for the secretary to go to certain lengths to get records when the veteran cannot bracket something down. 13 months in this case, maybe that becomes the example. What happens at 15 months? What happens at the 24 and the 32? He's right. We don't have to decide it now. But you're looking for some precedential case that gives that guidance. And how do you give guidance if you don't talk about those other possibilities, if you will?
Well, this court has done just that in other areas, such as in Savage versus Shinseki, and the case about when is the VA required to request clarification from a private examiner. It's the court set forth basic factors that must be considered, and we know from the Savage case that if it's a hearing loss test and we're wondering if the CNC, Maryland spoken word test, was provided, we know under Savage that that is a reasonable request. And of course, there are going to be situations that don't fall directly under that particular fact scenario, such as in Carter versus...
Well, Savage is actually a little different, in my opinion. I mean, they gave a lot of criteria. Could the evidence be gathered? Is it something that is objective that could be provided? I'm talking about a period. That's an area. It's an objective type thing, and we're trying to figure out why 13 months is appropriate in this particular case, and what are the criteria why in this particular case it's appropriate, and how would you use that criteria to evaluate whether 6 months was appropriate in another case or 4 years was appropriate in another case. I guess what I'm looking at is, if you're going to set a precedential decision, what criteria to put out there with regard to the length of time? What I'm hearing is, it's like obscenity. I'll know it when I see it. And then maybe that's the answer. I don't know.
Well, I think the most important predicate that this court has to establish is that the veteran does not have to, in all cases, it's not a flat rule that you have to be able to narrow it down to 60 days. That's inconsistent with the statute. And then looking at the facts of this case, the 13-month period is reasonable. And with that, I think it's, again, important to hear what the Secretary has to say, so I'd like to...
Not so fast, Counselor. I have a few questions, at least 10 minutes worth. I'll start with two. They may blossom into more, but we'll see how we go from there. First of all, is it your understanding that the provision in the the 60-day provision is a result of convenience for the JSRRC to do its research?
That is my impression, yes, from Mr. Dominic Baldini and the CNP representative statements at the judicial conference.
Okay. What, in your estimation, what harm would be caused if the VA, from a policy standpoint, decided to expand that time period, to your knowledge?
I think that
does it cause any problems? This is a question I'll ask the VA as well, but does it cause any problems?
Not from our standpoint. We think that would be great.
I figured you'd think that would be good.
In fact, we would like to further not to be a specific time frame. We think it really is a case-by-case basis. In some cases, it would be unreasonable to search 20 years of morning reports. But in other cases, not unreasonable to search 2-3 years of death logs. So you really have to look at the facts of the case and what's reasonable.
Right. To your understanding, is this VA policy that is represented in the M21 applied consistently across the board? Are there cases that you're aware of where the 60-day period has not been applied?
The only instance in which I'm aware of that the 60-day period is not applied, and I know Judge Greenberg says that he's uncovered particular cases in which it's happened, is deck log searches. In the new version of the M21, which was updated in April 2015, it specifically says that VA can request up to 120 days of deck logs, and that if they need more than that, they can go to other resources. So it seems like the JSRRC is willing to look at 120 days, and the VA is willing to look at other resources beyond 120 days, but only in the specific case of deck logs.
Okay. Quite frankly, I'm having a hard time understanding the context of your client's situation, and was hoping that the record would reveal more, but it didn't. We did request a transcript from the the hearings, and I understand that there were scheduled hearings, but your client decided not to attend
right.
those hearings.
And withdrew his request.
Okay. With respect to the girlfriend that he met and went on a family vacation with, was there a name ever provided to your knowledge in the record? I don't remember seeing a name, but that's really not important. My point is, could he have provided buddy statements regarding that incident to your knowledge?
No. If you look at the record in his stressor, excuse me, in his stressor statement, he did provide a name. Just to answer your question, yes, he did provide the girlfriend's name. Again, we're not pursuing that because we
right.
don't think that that can be corroborated by military records.
Right. But what about buddy statements?
Now, in his stressor statement, he mentioned a Quisenberry who was driving the truck, but he didn't indicate that he is able to contact this individual. He was informed that he could and contact him and get a buddy statement and didn't submit a buddy statement. So I think the reasonable conclusion from that is that he can't contact this particular person with whom he served 40 years ago.
Right.
And he also stated before he got this May 2010 letter from the VA asking for additional information,
mm-hmm.
he clearly stated at page 94 of the record in April 2010, I don't remember exact dates, nor all names of persons involved, but have provided the information to the best of my ability.
Right. And you know, that's certainly reasonable after 41 years and now a PTSD diagnosis that's not necessarily service-connected, but at least there was a diagnosis. The other part that's difficult for me is if you are attempting to rescue another service member and you plunge your hand into the back of that service member, and even after 41 years you don't remember the name, I suppose that's possible. But having been in the service and in a combat environment, it's something that I suspect many of us would remember who that person was who died. But again, I understand your position.
Right. I mean, the unfortunate truth of the matter is that the particular population that we work with oftentimes does have mental health disabilities like Mr. Gagne, including which often come with memory loss and cognitive disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
So what might be something that seems reasonable to you or I might not be reasonable to somebody in Mr. Gagne's.
I understand. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Well, if there aren't any other questions, let's hear what the Secretary has to say.
Thank you. I'm not going to give you 25 minutes at the end unless we need it.
Your Honors, in response to the court's oral argument, Your Honors, in response to the court's August 31st order, outline the issues to be discussed at oral argument and after consultation with the agency program experts and further research, Secretary concedes his duty to assist was not filled up in this case under 5103A. The Secretary apologizes to the court and the
well, what was the violation? what does the Secretary think should have been done that wasn't?
Well, firstly, Your Honor, in this case, the veteran never assisted the appellant in trying to narrow down his time frame. With regards to the time frame, the VA never performed the appellant.
All right, well, let me follow up on that, because when I go through this record and I see that the regional law, it actually went fairly fast. And the regional office got the information. They sent out their request. They didn't get a reply. They apparently made a phone call to the veteran, and the veteran then provided this information. They got the information, and then they sent out another letter saying, hey, we need more specifics. All that seems like it's reasonable to me. And then he gets the decision, actually, again, fairly fast, after the determination was made that there was not enough information to go to the JSRRC. 3 days later, 4 days later, they give him the RO decision. He responds to that. And ultimately, he elects a DRO. and then the DRO does a review, and in the DRO, he summarizes the evidence, and one of the items that he does not cite in his summary of the evidence is the 18 or whatever May letter asking for additional information and the failure to respond to that. It's referenced in other documents that have been cited, but he doesn't specifically cite that. So my question to you is, the regional office has this duty and the duty to assist. When you go to a DRO, what are the duties of the DRO? I mean, is it sit there and just review the record as it existed before if the veteran doesn't proactively submit additional information and render a new decision? Or does the DRO have the same basic duties, redo it again, and, geez, here's a letter we wrote the veteran. He didn't respond. It's the only document not responded to by the veteran where we ask for more specificity. Does the DRO have an obligation at that point to do what I thought you were just indicating, that VA had not fulfilled, and that's the obligation to follow up and try and help the veteran narrow? And was that the DRO? Is that a DRO duty?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, a duty to assist was violated in regards to narrowing down the statement for the appellant. Also, there was a
okay,
time.
I'm trying to figure out. The RO moved fairly quickly. Did the RO violate because they didn't follow up on the May letter asking for more specificity before they got the statement from the JSRRC coordinator that they weren't going to send it over? Or did the RO act? He already asked once. He didn't get a reply. He's fine. But the DRO had a duty.
Your Honor, in this case, the RO had a duty.
All right. Now, I do want to find out a little bit more about the DRO because it's out there and we don't really talk about it too much. If the RO failed, which you're telling us he did the DRO have a duty to do that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And then the board had the duty to review the duty to assist and discuss the JSRRC and the failure to get information and whether or not it complied and whether or not they coordinated with the veteran, which, by the way, in the duty to assist, the board didn't even mention the JSRRC. They talked about it later in their facts, but not in that area. So you see that as an overall duty throughout the entire process?
Yes, Your Honor. With regards to the duty to assist.
That could be a good panel case.
With regards to the duty to assist in this case, Your Honor, the appellant was not informed with regards to whether he could submit statements to help narrow down the issues, like maybe possible as a veteran, what season that it occurred in, was it the beginning of his tour, the middle of his tour, the end of his tour, or other things that may help this veteran, in this case, narrow down time
frame. So let me ask you this, counsel. The secretary would be content if, would the secretary be content if the court were to rule that in this case, the duty to assist included asking the Defense Department agency, in however many times the Defense Department agency by its procedures required for this 13-month period of service in the Vietnam theater?
No, Your Honor, not in this case, not yet. At this point, it's premature because we didn't comply with the duty to assist to help the appellant narrow down the time frame. The VA needs to at least try to help the veteran narrow down the time frame. And then he may be able to narrow down time frame. And if he's
Let me answer this. How does the secretary envision the regional office or the department helping the veteran to narrow down the time frame? He's told you. I wrote a letter. He wrote a letter. He said, this is what happened to me when I was in Thailand. His DD-214 shows a 13-month service, Vietnam Combat Medal. So what's the secretary supposed to do to help him?
Well, Your Honor, I'm sorry.
Narrow it down to these 2-month periods. Why not just say, can you help us? Was it the first 2 months? No, I can't remember. Second 2 months? No. Third, whatever. What if he says, I can't remember? I know what happened when I was over there. I don't know the name of the fellow I tried to save his life. That's not unusual. 40 years later, heat of combat. At least not to me, it isn't. So I can't do any better than tell you, I was over there, this is what happened to me, and this is what I'm suffering now. What more does the secretary need in order to insist that the Defense Department go through its records in these 2-month increments?
Again, Your Honor, it's a case-by-case basis.
And in this case,
the duty to assist was not met. So VA needs to help the veteran send letters out to the veteran to possibly try to narrow down time frame. It would be premature in this case to send it all.
Well, let's go premature. Let's say they called the veteran and they spoke with him. And he said, the best I can do is it was in the first 6 months that I was overseas. So I got it down to 6 months. The judge's question is, if you can get it down, we know it's 13 months. Let's say you called and got it to 6 months, and the guy just can't get it down to 2 months. Is there an obligation on VA to go ahead and submit one request for the first 2 months, a second request for the second 2 months, and a third request for the third 2 months?
Again, Your Honor, in this case, it would be premature. However, if after development is reviewed and he's able to narrow time frame within 6 months, then yes, VA could request multiple requests of 60 days in increments to satisfy that time frame.
He could be near death. This is 40 years ago. How old is he? Do you know? Does the VA know how old he is? Do VA know what his physical condition is or mental condition? Why not just do the request on these incremental bases for 13 months?
Your Honor, the appellant was able to narrow down would not only help.
Assume he can't. He would have if he could. He can't. You have to assume that, don't you? He didn't reply, or he didn't send anything further that narrows it down. Isn't that up to the secretary to help the man out and say, okay, if that's the best you can do, I was over there, this is what happened, I don't know anything more, I can't help you. Doesn't the secretary have an obligation, at least for the 13-month period that he was over there, to go over to the Defense Department and say, check your records?
Again, Your Honor, the Secretary's position in this case, it is premature to get to that conclusion as far as the record.
Does premature mean you don't have an obligation?
Assume
the facts, as I've stated them, which I believe are the actual facts, this is the best I can do. I was over there during this 13-month period. In fact, you've got the record. This is DD-214. The Defense Department has the record. They know when he was there. They can fix it to within 13 months. Is your position that the department has nothing, your department, has no further obligation until he physically comes forward and says, I can't do better than a year or 13 months?
No, Your Honor.
Well, what is he supposed to do?
Well, in this particular case, the duty to assist was not met. VA is trying to help the veteran comply with his duty. But if he's unable to do that, then VA will request multiple requests in this case if he's unable to narrow it down.
You're already up here with a 3-judge panel on this. Wouldn't it be efficient and fair to the veteran to just say, all right, we'll just keep asking the Defense Department for this information in 2-month increments until we've completed the 13 months? And if you can help us there, we'll go back to the veteran.
Well, Your Honor, if we were to go to the veteran, he may narrow it down. If he's able to narrow it down, it would help the secretary in his position as far as looking for these documents.
Okay. You say that the RO or whatever, the department has, I think you use the word, violated its responsibility or duty to assist.
Duty to assist. All right.
So what is it that you're going to do after you leave here today? Either before we decide or what do you want us to decide we should order you to do, or we should say that veteran is entitled to?
Well, Your Honor, the Secretary's position is that you should remand the case for the Secretary to comply with his duty to assist in this case, which would include sending a letter back to the veteran telling it to this particular case, the facts in this case, to attempt to have him narrow down in this case. Additionally, we will also inform the veteran, once he's narrowed down, if he is unable to narrow it down in this case, then at that point, the decision will be made whether or not the request is to be sent off with regards to the 13-month time window.
Well, why do you require the veteran to do that? Why should the veteran have to struggle? This is a mental problem he's got. Why should he have to struggle with the events of 41 years ago to tell the secretary, it's not the first 2 months, it may be the second 2 months or whatever it is. I just can't tell you that. Why don't you just ask the Defense Department to go through 13 months of its records? And if it insists that it's going to have it in 2-month increments, then do it. We found 3 cases on these deck logs, which is an analogous situation, where on your own, apparently. These are reported cases. They don't have names on them, but they certainly have numbers, and they're within the last 2 years where the secretary has, on these deck log cases, submitted 2 months, another 2 months, another 2 months. Why not do it here?
Again, Your Honor.
What are you torturing the veteran for?
Again, Your Honor, it's the secretary's position that in this case, the need to assist was not met for the reason that we did not try to narrow down time frame in the appellant's case.
Can you tell us a little bit about the review that is done by the JSRRC, what the resources are and why VA and JSRRC apparently came up with efforts to try and bracket the period in which they search? Can you do that or not?
The JRRC, Your Honor.
And my understanding is it's just a whole boatload of documents, and it's the two-month period that they search, and it's a bunch of documents within the two-month period. And that, therefore, that's why they wanted that, because it's not done in full chronological by every little thing, or by every little boat, or by every little unit. It's rather done in a big, long period, 10 years or whatever. But do you know any better? I mean, I don't know.
That is chronological, or Your Honor. And it's the office is in Alexandria, Virginia, Your Honor. And it's actual people. I think it's 13 people, to Secretary's knowledge, 13 people that work there. They actually physically go to the archives and different places to research these.
And it's all chronological. So everything from Vietnam and from 1963 to 1970 is all in a chronological, and they go in and they take the two-month period, and it's all documents and everything related to that. Is that how it's done?
To the best of Secretary's knowledge, yes, Your Honor.
All right. Has the Secretary ever considered resourcing or providing additional resources to DOD to try and expand the ability to research? Do you know? I mean, you may not.
No.
Okay.
Yes,
sir.
Do you know what the Defense Department agency in Alexandria, Virginia does? Does it look up by name, connected with his unit, with his MOS, with the years, or in this case, 13 plus months of service? How does it do it?
I'm not clear on how.
How do these people over in Alexandria, the 13 people you've just been talking about,
yes,
they get a request from the VA, check this.
Correct.
What do? They get up from their desk and go to a shelf? Do they have a computer?
They go to the National Archives, Your Honor, to search for those records. They physically go to the National Archives to search for those records.
So the National Archives is the repository of the basic document. And this Defense Department agency is the middleman between the VA and the archives to go search for these records. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
All right. So these 13 people in Alexandria, what do? Pick up the phone and call the archives and say, do you have David Raymond Gagne? What else do they say? What else do they ask? Do you know?
No, Your Honor. They actually physically go to the National Archives and pull the records for the particular time.
So they get out of their desk in Alexandria and go to some other government office?
Correct.
Where's that government office?
Wherever the National Archives is located.
Across the street is one of them, but they obviously have a building somewhere else. Do they physically go there?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what do they do when they get there?
They use the information that's provided within that time frame, and they gather these boxes and go through the boxes with that time frame in it to check whatever information is contained in those boxes.
Well, what is the box with regard to Gagne contain? Or what would they be asking for? A period of time connected with his name? A period of time connected with a...
I'm going to try to jump in here. My understanding is it's a period of time with everything in it. And then they look for Gagne, or the unit. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Did they do that here? No, you didn't request them to do that. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But as I understand it, it's the volume of multiple, everything that occurred within a time period, and that's why they say 2 months, because we're talking time to just search all these documents within that two-month period.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. So the question becomes, you do six of them over 13 months. What if it was 3 years overseas and they couldn't remember? Do you do 36? And that's the issue that I was trying to get
I'll try to be brief. But in this case, you've got a 13-month period. No one knows what was going on in Vietnam during this particular 13-month period as opposed to a quiet period of 5 years or 2 months. So it's not the two-month period that's dispositive, is it? I mean, there may be a huge number of cases, boxes, for February 1968 in Vietnam when the Tet Offensive was going on, by way of example. And there might be one box for the period of time that Mr. Gagné was there. Isn't that correct?
Your Honor, it could be correct, but it would be highly unlikely for one box for the amount of volume.
Versus figuratively. I'm just saying that the period of time involved is not necessarily dispositive of the work involved for this agency to look through the two-month window. You could have a quiet 13-month period and an extremely active two-month period. In other words, the amount of work involved for this agency of the Defense Department may not depend upon the fact that they've arbitrarily, or let's say not arbitrarily. I think what we're trying to do is, what's the magic of 2 months?
Well, Your Honor,
how does DOD justify to your satisfaction? You've got the duty to assist, not DOD. Your agency has the duty to assist by act of Congress. So what have you done to satisfy yourself that the DOD's requirement of 2 month increments is either reasonable or not arbitrary or not capricious in terms of your obligation to assist the veteran?
May I have a moment to confer with Counsel, Your Honor?
Sure.
Your Honor, there are duties.
I don't mean to be too aggressive.
Oh, you're fine, Your Honor. That's okay.
At you, counsel.
That's okay, Your Honor.
I'm just trying to do my best to get the Secretary's position.
Gosh, I never said that. He's kind.
Your Honor, the response is that the Secretary is not bound by JSRC's duty to assist. So that's why in other cases, it's a case-by-case basis. The VA needs to determine or make more requests, it would, Your Honor. But in this particular case, we can't even get there. The Secretary's position is we can't even get there because of duty to assist. There are other violations in this case that the Secretary needs to address before even determining in this case if that's the right remedy for this case. The Secretary's position is that we should remand this case, Your Honor, send it back for VA to comply with duty to assist, to further assist his veteran. It may be possible, it may not be, but it may be possible that he may be able to narrow the time frame and VA tells a letter to his veteran. It may be possible. And if so, the VA can narrow the time frame, which in turn help the veteran as far as when we send the request, all as far as I'm looking, the volume that this is looking, it will be a good possibility if it's narrowed down, but it may help the veteran. And if not, after that, it's a case-by-case determination, Your Honor, and the VA will look. So if it's possible that it may be sent off with the Secretary's positions, we're not there yet, because in this case, we need to help the veteran due to assist, with a duty to assist violation.
I understand your position.
Ms. Springs, I understand now that the VA is conceding that the duty to assist was not met. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the reason for that is because the Secretary's position is that enough was not done to help the veteran in narrowing the time frame. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so in some ways, the bigger picture here is that we're looking at the scope of the duty to assist. Is that correct?
In this particular case, yes, Your Honor, duty to assist.
Right, and it has implications for other cases as well. Would it be helpful to the department if this three-judge panel, Mr. Stitchman and Mr. Good article, by the way. If this three-judge panel issued a precedential decision that addressed specific issues regarding the 60 days and its viability, or expanded that time period, or discussed in the context of that decision additional efforts that could be made by the department. My question is, would that be helpful to the department?
In this case, Your Honor, the duty to assist was violated, so we can't even get to the 60 days without sending it back to try to further help the veteran. So don't even get to the, we won't get to that issue in this case because it needs to go back to help this particular veteran in this case with the duty to assist issue to make sure VA complies with the duty to assist in this case, Your Honor, before we even get to the 60 days for this particular case.
Well, what happens? I understand that. What happens to other cases that we might have before us in the future? I mean, this is a problem not only for this case. Would you agree with that? This is a problem for other cases, too, potentially?
It could be a potential problem for other cases.
Right. So I'm looking at a broader fix here. I mean, that's part of what the role of a lawgiver is to try to fix the law sometimes.
Yes, Your Honor, it is. But in this particular case, the issue is not right. We can't get to this case in particular because the duty to assist by VA was not met.
Okay.
So the issue to assist for 60 days we wouldn't even get to at this particular time.
So is your answer to my question no?
Yes, Your Honor, for this particular case.
That a presidential decision from this court would not help the department.
With regards to, if, in the duty
with respect
to
the M21 60-day provision and the government's efforts here.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So I just want to, I would have used law interpreter as opposed to law giver, but we can talk about that later. So what the government is doing is coming before this panel and saying, within the broad spectrum of the duty to assist, which includes all sorts of things, in this case, you focus on the beginning, we should have helped him narrow it down a little better. And he can probably do that. And if he's successful, we don't need to address the other issues, and therefore, court, you should limit your opinion to solely that issue and let it go back to VA. And your opponent, as I understand the argument, is saying, geez, this is VA. I'm kind of putting it in her words, all right? These aren't mine. This is VA. The guy will try, and he's not going to be able to get it down, and the next thing you know, they're going to put a limit on how many times they can go to the JSRRC. In fact, the regional office making this decision, or the board, if it does it on its own, might say, we're limited to the 2 months. And we never got to that particular issue in this case because you want us to take the broad spectrum of the duty to assist, slice it down, and only look at this part. Is that fair?
Yes, Your Honor. That's correct.
So with regard to a broader view than what you want, which is you go to the veteran, and it's not a case where he refuses and says, I'm not cooperating. It's a case where he says, this is the best I can do. I think you said earlier that you would go, you would make a determination as to whether you would go to the JSRRC, which tells me that you do not, at least today, representing the Secretary, read the manual as limiting them to only one request, period.
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. But you're not prepared to say how many would be appropriate because it's based on the facts of the case.
Correct, Your Honor.
I see your position.
So would there be room to renegotiate with JSRRC about the 60-day period, to your knowledge?
To the best of my knowledge, Your Honor, it's JSRRC's requirement with regard to 60 days, so I'm unsure.
Right,
well, it's been proffered that the head says he can do more time period, so.
Again, Your Honor, with the best of my knowledge, I can't speak.
It would be something that we could suggest up to the Secretary, Your Honor, would be an appropriate response.
I'm sorry.
Just suggesting.
Sounds like a good idea. Right, good idea. Okay, I don't have anything else.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah, we're going to start with 5 minutes, and if you need more, or if we need more, we'll let you go.
So let's start with the elephant in the room. The Secretary's concessions that they're making right here, which is that the 60-day time limit isn't necessarily the rule in each case, is directly contradicted by the M21 provision. And as far as I know, I didn't hear any indication from the Secretary that they're willing to remove that provision or change that provision. And that is the Bible to the regional offices. No adjudicator is going to look at that mandatory language and decide, well, that doesn't really apply. We can make additional requests if we need to.
So your position is that a precedential opinion from this three-judge panel would be helpful to your client and to the department?
Yes, and we would like you to go further and order the Secretary to invalidate that M21 provision, like the court did in a very early case, Earl versus Brown, where the M21 said that the only evidence that could be considered for purposes of presumptive service connection for radiogenic diseases was evidence submitted directly to the VA from the Defense Nuclear Association, and this court invalidated that rule as, quote, unacceptable in light of our holdings. Here, this M21 provision is unacceptable in light of 5103A. And furthermore, to the extent that the Secretary insists that in this case this narrowing has to be done first. First of all, Mr. Gagne said on page 94 of the record, I've already provided you the information to the best of my ability. That indicates, and the fact that he didn't respond to the letter should indicate to the Secretary, to this court, that he's unable to narrow it down to 60 days. And what I understood the Secretary...
Well, just to be clear, that letter came before he got the request to narrow it down to 60 days.
That's true.
All right.
But what I heard from the Secretary up here was, first, the Secretary said, we'll try to narrow it down, 6 months would be okay. And then said, if we're not able to do that, we can do multiple requests in this case only. And then later in the argument said, once we send the letter to narrow, we will make the decision as to whether additional requests would be made. So again, it's avoiding getting rid of the 60-day policy, which the Secretary is willing to concede in open court today, isn't reasonable in this particular case. And as Judge Greenberg pointed out, it's the VA that has the duty to assist. Congress imposed upon the agency an affirmative duty to assist a veteran, knowing that the veteran often can't obtain records from the military, him or herself, as the Federal Circuit noted in Moore versus Shinseki.
What troubles me is, even assuming the big picture, why should this court, whether individually pursuant to the statute which created the court, or in a panel of three or more, why should we do something more than is necessary to resolve the dispute between the parties? If we order the Secretary to go back and do the record search in 2 month increments, if it finds itself bound by the Defense Department rule and its own manual, assuming it's inconsistent with the Department of Veterans Affairs own manual, we order, in this case, 2 month increment searches. Why do we have to go beyond that and issue an advisory, perhaps, opinion, or some other category, a pigeonhole, when we can resolve it by saying the dispute between these two parties, the Secretary and Mr. Gagne, is hereby resolved by our order directing the Secretary to do 2 month increment requests for the 13 months that he was in Vietnam? Why shouldn't we stop there?
If the court goes so far as to issue a precedential decision that...
Why do you keep using the word precedential?
Because we need some law in this area that says the 60-day rule is not appropriate in all cases and is not appropriate in this case. And going back to your comment, Judge Greenberg, it's because the duty to assist has been imposed upon the VA, and to the extent that the VA says, well, this is JSRRC's rule and we need to throw our hands up, the problem is that Congress also gave the Secretary the right to receive this information. In 38 U.S.C. 5106, Congress said that the head of all federal agencies
shall... 2 minutes, please.
I'm sorry?
Just adding time.
We're adding 2 minutes, please.
Okay. Shall provide the Secretary with the information requested. So if the JSRRC says, well, 60 days, the Secretary has the right to say, no, that 60 days is not going to work for us. And they have the statutory authority to assert that right. And to the extent that the VA just throws its hands up, it's a continuing violation of the duty to assist. And that should be made clear for the VA, for veterans, and for the public.
So if after today's oral argument, the General Counsel's office and you sit down and you discuss changes to the M21 or at least how the Secretary processes requests that fall under it, would you still need a precedential opinion?
Mr. Gagne has represented to us that he will be satisfied if the outcome of this case helps other veterans. So the VA enters into an agreement in which it's bound by and enters into an agreement to
change. Why wouldn't that be advisory? I mean, why wouldn't going beyond what is necessary remand this case and get it continued to be processed be advisory? I mean, at the end of the day, we're really looking at one case.
It's not advisory. It's further guidance to the tribunal for the proceedings on remand. And this court has precedent to do that, and that's Quirin versus Shinseki. And in a lot of more recent presidential cases, the court has been ready and willing to invoke Quirin to go on to provide needed guidance to the tribunal below. And this guidance is especially needed in this case where this M21 provision stands and the Secretary has made no indication that he's willing to change it. And if there are no further questions, I would like to conclude. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will come down, the case will be submitted, and we will come down and greet counsel.
All right.
Thank you.